Welcome to For the Record, an unfiltered view on current trends and timeless advice for surviving in the aesthetics industry. Whether you're an injector, practice owner, sales rep, or marketer, it's time to set the record straight. Each week, we cut through the chaos and showcase diverse perspectives and winning ideas from the best minds in the industry. I'm your host, Dr. Tiffany Hall, Chief Growth Officer at Aesthetic Record. Now, let's get started on this week's episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of For the Record. And today we're going to sunny Florida, to Naples, Florida, to talk to our next guest, Dana Zeitler, who is from Deluxe Med Spa in Naples, where she and her husband had started the med spa in, I think, 2017, if I'm going from memory here. But she's been all into aesthetics since 2009, so she's a legitimate original gangster, the OGs, as we say here. Been a PA for 30 years, so she knows all the things. And I'm interested to see today how it's changed and morphed and grown as an industry, not only from her as an injector, but also a business owner. She is training for Galderma. She's out and about doing that. Also has private trainings in her own clinic, doing shadow days. She has a beautiful, beautiful website. You have got to go look at it. It has a whole e-commerce section on it. A whole part about her training is on there. It just is absolutely fantastic. So I'm happy to have you on today, Dana, to go through your business, your injection training, your website, all the things that you're doing to make you a phenomenal injector and businesswoman. So welcome to For the Record.
Thank you so much, Tiffany. I am so excited to be here. I'm grateful for you to have me on, and I'm excited to share about my journey. Hopefully, I can help some other injectors out there or possible business owners. I'm super excited about Aesthetic Next as well.
Didn't even mention that part yet. And gosh, she's coming to Aesthetic Next. You're doing, I think, the new injector boot camp or new business owner boot camp, one of the two, one of the boot camps. And also another talk about lasers and devices and kind of how that fits into all the things in the practice, and which we're going to discuss later on, that you're a big laser advocate, which is not the normal here on For the Record. So I want to hear all about that. But yeah, give us an idea of, you know, even in this, again, like I said, for quite a while, 2009, like we were barely even doing injections back then. I'm sure looking back on that now, you laugh at what you were doing back then compared to now. But how did you get to this journey from where you were to now aesthetics and now being a practice owner?
So my background as a PA or original PA, still a PA, but was surgery and critical care. So super technical, very procedure driven background. And I sort of randomly got into the industry in 2009. One of my colleagues, who is a nurse practitioner, was working at a large chain hair removal center, and she was pregnant and needed to go on maternity leave. And I said, oh, hair removal, that sounds kind of fun. And she said, yeah, it's great. They need somebody to cover my maternity leave. Do you want to work there? And we were just sitting next to each other at dinner. And so that's how I got my first job in aesthetics, was very random. So then I worked from there to tattoo removal. So I actually got into aesthetics with lasers.
So that's why you're a laser guru, a laser junkie, because you started there. Okay, so let's take a beat and just say laser hair removal. No one says today, Dana, oh, laser hair removal, I would love to do that. But it builds practices. Like, side note, it builds practices. It's a huge part of it. I think tattoos now, another big part of it. It's a whole different market that you wouldn't otherwise get for like a Botox injection or a filler injection. So kudos to you for being an LHR pioneer back in the day. So you start doing that, you're doing tattoos, and then how did you end up now? You're on my Instagram all day, every day, with all of your fun little Instagram posts and all your education that you're doing. So how did Dana circa 2023 come about from that original LHR humble beginnings?
Well, the LHR really teaches you customer service, and they had a great program for training. So I'm honestly grateful for that experience. The place that hired me for the tattoo removal also did injectables. Back then, it was so long ago that the hair removal place did not do injectables at that time. So they did not have another injector. So they said, oh, you want to do injectables? Great. You can do injectables. Of course, there was no training for injectables back then. So I really had to self-train for injections, which means palate courses. That was one of the main ways that I got trained. There was hardly anything on YouTube. I think Steve Weiner might have had a couple videos, and Rajani doing, you know, hardly any conferences. So that was the big thing, is self-training. We had Juvederm, we had Restylane. I don't even think I used Dysport back then. It was just Botox. So it's been a huge change, and only we didn't have full facial anything. We were nasolabial folds, and it was a huge deal when Voluma came out for cheeks. That changed everything.
Yeah, and think of where we are now. We just launched a tear trough filler, what, last week? I mean, my gosh, it's changed. But you mentioned there was no training. It's funny, I was at Derjani this weekend, and one of my employees said, how did he get so famous? I'm like, well, he was an original YouTube guy. When there was no training anywhere, he showed up and trained. Like, he was the only person talking about how to do anything that was sophisticated. He was training the world, you know, going around the world learning things. But I look at that now, like, I'm sure a cannula wasn't even part of your thinking and your mindset for probably a decade. I mean, I think I launched cannula with Galderma in 17, 18. And we estimated that maybe 8% of the population in the U.S. used a cannula. Like 8% back then used cannulas. And, you know, in 2009, we weren't even, what's a cannula? If you weren't using it in surgical settings and, you know, as a medical professional in a medical setting, you probably didn't even know what it was or how to use it. So all that's changed. And so if you think about where you're at now from a training standpoint, what are the most like marked differences that you see? If I'm a new injector coming into the industry today, from what you had to cut your teeth and learn on to what I would learn and have exposure to as a new injector coming in, like how does it change for you? Because I think there's also a risk when we have too much now, and it's not all good. It's like we have an opposite problem. Now we had nothing, now we have an overkill. So as you're kind of navigating that, even with your own employees who are going to conferences and going to training, it's like, how does that feel for you, and how do you figure out where navigate where to go and what to actually listen to?
Well, I think it's tough. It's tough to train on the whole face and not focus just on one area. But I do approach my patients globally with what do they need for their whole face. So I have a brand new injector that just started with me 3 weeks ago. And my plan is really to take her through the lower risk areas first and train her on, you know, cheeks first. It's not going to be nasolabial folds. It's not going to be some of these higher risk areas. It's going to be, you know, getting her really good with toxin, full face toxin, ideally, but we'll start with upper face, make her know how to use toxin magically on the face, get her really good with the laser, and gradually ease her in with the fillers and anatomy. You know, anatomy back then, we just didn't even talk about it. And now it's a huge deal. So taking her through, signing her up for cadaver classes, and I'm going through anatomy with her constantly. I have anatomy posters on the wall. That's a much bigger deal in the industry than it used to be.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We were just kind of flying blind back then. You know, now we have ultrasound as well. I don't know if you're using ultrasound in your practice, but it's a big deal too. You know, use the ultrasound, use the cadaver courses, use all these things. But you mentioned full face. I think that's such an exciting but yet scary thing for a new injector, because to your point, you're having to learn everything all at once, and they want to learn it all right now. Like, I want to learn everything today. In my 1 3-hour session with you, I'm going to pay and come learn everything there is to learn. And we think about, we used to spend a whole day just learning cheeks, and a whole day just doing lips, and a whole day just, you know, looking at glabella tox, not even off label, just like the 5-point glabella injection was a whole day of training. And now we want to put all that into like one day. And so I feel like there is a giant risk there. As you're out training people with Galderma, with, you know, even your own private trainings, how do you fit all that in and make it realistic for someone who's trying to learn all the things and they think they can do it all in just one day? Because you and I both know that's not possible.
It's not possible. So when I sit down with at a Galderma training or even a private training, I first figure out, what are the goals of the injector? So what do they really want me to focus in on that at the end of the training that they got out of it? So I will, you know, I'll say, what's your main thing today? Because I know I can focus on one thing, but if they came to me and they said, oh, full face, the whole thing, it really is impossible. You can maybe touch on full face assessment, but to actually inject the full face in 1 4-hour training is really difficult. And I don't think it's practical.
Not even close to practical. But even in your own clinic, so you have a brand new injector who you just hired on. As you think about onboarding her, again, this is one of those big questions that we get asked here at AR a lot, because we have access to so many of you, you know, through Aesthetic Next and other places that are so great at what you do, is how do you get your own employees who are brand new to this up to speed? Like, is it, you know, does she learn cheeks one day and then she's doing 8 cheek models the next week and then she gets signed off on? Or what does your process look like to make sure that for your own staff that they're doing it the deluxe way, that it looks like what you want it to look like, it feels like what you want it to look like, and that they're almost being checked off, you know, like a pilot gets his flight time checked off on before they're able to take off and go on their own?
Well, that's a good point. I actually do that. But the first The first thing that I'm doing with her is just having her shadow. So she's working as a medical assistant with me for the first 8 weeks. And that is, you know, written in the first 8 weeks, you are going to shadow. And that's all you're going to do is absorb. You're going to learn how everything that I like done and how I like to do it. So she's going to be a little, you know, just a sidekick constantly all day long. And she's on her third week. So now I'm having her take all my photographs, mark my patient, draw up my product, figure out the dosage for my product. And then I can go in and I can say this, you know, this is right, this is wrong, a little bit more, why, you know, which eyebrow is higher. And we can assess that together. So basically everything except the injection. And then she watches me do the injection. Hopefully starting in the next week or so, we'll start doing some models. So maybe we'll do two or three models. We'll follow up with them in 2 weeks. We'll see how they did. And probably there'll be staff members or family of staff, and gradually increase her from there with responsibility and what she's allowed to do. And exactly, I like to do a checkoff. So I like to have a certain number of procedures. So for a toxin, you know, at least 20 toxin patients, at least 10 BBL patients, at least 5 MOXIE patients, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think you have to just do it a lot. Like you have to have almost like the hand memory, the eye memory, the getting your brain to think about it. Because, you know, if you think about a new injector and you're thinking back to when you were like a baby injector many, many years ago, having to think through the artistic part of injecting, also the technical part of it, thinking about what plane you're in, if you're using a cannula or a needle, are you aspirating or you're not aspirating, whatever the popular research is that week that tells you which one to do. Are you thinking about, you know, the vasculature, and are you in the sub-Q, and is it periosteal? All the things you got to think about when you're brand new, that's a lot of stuff to put in your mind. So I feel like you have to just have rote memorization of doing it over and over and over again, so it becomes almost automatic or mechanistic for you to do it and not have to think so hard about all the things. But that takes time. So I look at people who are like a master injector now a year later, and I'm like, are you really a master injector? You've been doing this for 1 year. Like you haven't seen enough faces. You haven't had enough complications to call yourself a master. Unless you've had a VO and had to work through that, or even just non-VO occlusion, you know, non-occlusion type complications, it's hard to say that you're a master. And I'm sure over the years, despite being fantastic at what you do, it just is a law of averages. You're going to have them. Like I'm sure you've had them. It just happens. There's a whole plan in place for that as well. You have to teach that whole plan to your injectors. Like it's just a lot to take in. So, you know, looking at your person right now, how long does that onboarding process last typically?
So I think she's going to be onboarded to see patients and charge for it and make money in about 6 months. I will not be profitable on her probably for a year. And I've just been through this with another injector that I hired, and she had her 1 year anniversary in May, and we are finally turning a profit on her. And it's an investment. It's a huge investment in your team. And that's why it's so important to take your time with hiring and hire smart and be very, very conscientious about the person that you hire. Ask lots and lots and lots of questions.
Well, I'm sure you've hired lots of people over the years. How do you protect your business from that? Thinking about what you're investing as an owner and also as an injector who is being trained or being paid to train elsewhere, right? So your time is worth money as a trainer as well. Do you put that in their contract? You know, you have to work so many months here to pay it back. And if you don't, you have to pay us something. How do you kind of protect that investment on your end? Because I agree with you. It takes a long time for an employee to be profitable. And even then, I mean, to your point, if you don't spend the time and do it, then it's even more disastrous. Like it takes even longer. So gosh, 6 months well spent for sure. But how do you protect the practice from that?
So I do have a contract in place that I have my providers sign that is protective to me if they should leave within a certain amount of time. And there, I don't have a payback amount. I know some practices do that. I don't have that, but I do have a restrictive covenant. And I think part of it is faith that this person is going to work out and it's the right thing. I have had other, I've hired and have it not work out. And honestly, it was probably, I look back and I think it was my fault for hiring the wrong person and not asking more questions from the beginning and taking my time. So, but I do think you have to have a little faith. And when you hire that person, you've got to look at like, this person is going to be with me for the long term, hopefully. You don't look at it as this person might burn me, because it's kind of like falling in love again. You know, you get burned and then you get back on the horse and hopefully you keep dating and find the next person. And if you should separate, you want what's best for that person. I mean, they might move away. You know, their family might move. It might be out of your control and you wish them the best. And you have, I'm trying to set my practice up that it will be okay, even if providers leave.
Yeah, I can honestly say, and all the people we've hired here that didn't work out, it was my fault because I believed I had too much faith. I'm a faithful person when it comes to resumes and skill sets, you know, and I think what you mentioned is so key that you have to take a leap of faith and just kind of go with it. And in my case, people, you know, I'm sure it's the same for injectors. Resume comes in, it's like, oh, I'm the director of this thing at my current company. I've done it for 15 years. I'm so good at it. This is what I do. And then you hire them, like, oh, well, I didn't actually do it. I had a person doing it for me because I was too high level up. And so I'm too many years removed from actually doing it and being the, you know, the person, the doer. Now I'm just the leader. So, I mean, in all the cases where it's not worked out for me, it's my fault because I didn't do what you said. I didn't ask enough questions. I didn't go deep enough into it. I didn't really assess and pick apart and do, you know, job previews and job shadows and things. So it is often my fault. And I'm sure all of us can probably attest that it's been our fault before many times. So I think this idea of making them do an MA job and kind of try it out, try before you buy is a really nice option to have.
It'll be six. Yeah, she'll be an MA for 6 months, basically, before she becomes a full-time injector. And the pay is in line with that. So that's the other corner, sort of, I guess, protective to me for, but at the same time, I'd have to start all over with another person. So it's a lot of time. I've heard once that hiring is a very important decision for the hiree or the person you're hiring, but it's an even more important decision for the business.
Especially as small as med spas are, you know, in my world here, we have, you know, 40-ish employees. We have another 50 overseas. You know, we can absorb a person, a bad hire here and there, and probably just, you know, we can eat it. It's fine. It's not fun ever, but, you know, we can kind of absorb them in our midst. When you have two injectors and one of them doesn't work out, like, you have to take on a lot more, I'm sure, as another injector in the practice, as the owner, whether it's covering for that person or customer service concerns that come about, whatever it is. When you only have four or five headcount, it's a lot to lose a person. Plus, you know, to your point, all the time to recruit and to retain and hire and onboard. But I love the fact that you're hiring them as an MA and paying them that, because part of it, what I love to think about is, you know, when you're a physician, you go through like a residency, right, or a fellowship year. You make no money and you work really hard, or you make very little money. But that's what you do. That's your sacrifice, right? That's the cross that you bear to make that next move up. And I feel like with nurses oftentimes, particularly nurses, they come out of school and they get paid a ton of money, whether it's travel nursing or, you know, even in injectables, anesthetics. They don't have to do that suffering year in the same way that you would as a physician. This is like, no, if you want to earn your keep, you got to kind of sacrifice for a year and get it done. So I love that. I think PAs, you guys have a fellowship as well in some way. I think that you all, many of you do. So it's kind of the same thing as a physician. But yeah, it's like you got to earn your stripes. You got to put in the work to get there. And I think long term, it's great for them to take the second, learn it, do it your way. Because again, your name is on their back, right? They're injecting under your name and your brand, which is always a little scary. But I was looking at research about you as I was preparing for this. And you did a whole webinar with Mary Beth Hagan at Titan about MAs. I love the idea of an MA, and you mentioned about, you know, growing your practice, revenue, profitability, productivity. Give us the pitch for that, because I have lots of injector friends who refuse to get an MA. They say it's absolutely ridiculous. They're not going to get one. And I've heard some great talks about how much more profitable you can be with an MA and how much more productive you can be with an MA. So give us your pitch for us all to go out and hire an MA.
So hiring an MA is probably one of the best things I ever did. Increased my profitability by $600,000 the first year I hired the MA because she made me that much more efficient. So 100 times over earned her, because I was so worried. I was like, the MA that I hired, I had met her and I knew I wanted her. And she said, I can't come work for you until you can hire me full time and give me health benefits. So it forced me as an employer to get health benefits for all of us. And I had to be able to hire her full time. And I was nervous about it. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, it's this full time salary. And am I going to be able to handle this? And my other employees were part time. But it was the best decision I ever did. It makes me a better provider. It makes it a better experience for my patients. It makes me more efficient. I am spending much less time doing things that I don't really need to do. And I guess that's my pitch. It just, And I'm happier at the end of the day because I'm not drowning in all of these little details that really weren't that important that I can delegate to her. It also allows me to really focus on my patient when I'm with them and what they're saying, because I'm not thinking how many units I'm going to use, or I'm actually listening to them and really trying to hear what they're telling me and what they want to achieve with me. And so it just makes the whole experience with my patients better.
Yeah, I was at Modern BeautyCon a few weeks ago in Boston, and Leslie Fletcher was there, and she had the same discussion. She was talking about it allows her and the MA to kind of banter back and forth with the patient about, oh, what did we use last time? Oh, but I think, you know, we should use a bit more here and there. And so she's like, I'm able to upsell. Just the MA and I discussing with the patient what's going on, we're kind of upselling each other. And so the patient gets what they actually need, not what they came in for, what they actually needed to get. It's like not in a weird, you know, not like in a skeezy way, but like what the patient should have actually come in for from the get-go, they can get it now, because MA is like, no, if you do that, it's not going to work. You're going to have to do this. It's like, oh, yeah, you're right. Let me do this instead. And so it's like, it's really interesting to see the way that we've actually increased our sales and given patients, you know, a surprise and delight result because we're able to do things, and just also turning their room. Like, I can't imagine you guys going from practice, you know, patient to patient to patient to patient all day long, having to clean up your own room, restock your own inventory, make sure you have things that you've charted out of your inventory, and just there's a lot of things that have to be done there. And so I think an MA for me, charting alone, like not even the charting part, like all the other things you have to do, like with the inventory and the boxes and the units and the disport, and you have to, you know, is the top off of one? Is it off the other one? What's the solution to this one? What's the solution to that one? There's a lot of things there that, you know, in a sense, if they're mixed up or done wrong, could result in some pretty bad outcomes, but also it's just a lot of extra work that, to your point, is not needed by you. It doesn't require your expertise. It can be done by somebody else who's, you know, a really expert helper for you. So I'm all about it. $600,000 a year for one MA. Sister, you got to teach a class on this. That's remarkable.
I mean, it just, because it made me more efficient. And like what Leslie was saying, the MA compliments the patient too. So you'll do something and they're there, oh my God, that looks so good. Or they're chatting with the patient so that you can really focus on your injections and distracting them using, you know, we have the little vibrator that we hold and the ice packs and the vein finder and all of the things that make that experience that much better for the patient. So they want to come to you instead of the person down the street that's not doing all of those things.
But I envision if you're running behind schedule too, you can send the MA in ahead of time to go ahead and get pictures done, even start with numbing. You know, I think she's going to want to do this today. I'll go ahead and get you numbed. Because I feel like for me, if I'm waiting for a long time, but it's getting broken up by different people coming in and saying things to me and doing things for me, I don't mind it as much as waiting in a room for an hour, you know, for someone who's running late. So I think that can also help with just patient experience overall, just keeping things flowing and going, and, you know, front desk running back to the practice, you know, to the room in the back of the practice to tell you something. All that's just not efficient. So nice to have an in between there. But I think you should get an MA. If you guys don't have one, I think you should go get an MA. I think they're fantastic. And what kind of skill set do you look for? Do you look for like an actual true MA, or a person who's been working in like a medical facility or medical capacity who's coming in and you're going to make them into your MA?
I do look for medical capacity because I have them mixing my Botox for me and dealing with sharps and needles and saline. I want them to be trained with sterile technique. So I do look for somebody that has a medical assistant certificate.
Okay, so treat me. And you guys in Florida have a different set of rules. You're one of the only states that has to requires a PA, NP, or physician to inject. So there are no RNs. So can RNs work as MAs in your clinic, or are RNs able to do even lasers or other kinds of procedures and just not injectables? Like what's the law for the RNs in Florida?
So in Florida, you need to be a PA, nurse practitioner, DO, doctor to inject Botox fillers. For lasers, in a physician's office, it might be different, like if you're at a dermatology office. But as far as I know, RNs can't even run the laser. So you could hire an RN as a medical assistant, but most of the RNs, I had RNs apply for the medical assistant job. And they wanted to inject. So they were applying for the medical assistant because they wanted to be injectors. But I looked at that as a very short-term employee. And that wasn't really something that I was looking at. Maybe in another state, that would make more sense that you could bring somebody on as an RN for as an MA, have them work as an MA for a year, and then transition them to that injector job. They'd probably be an amazing injector. But for me, it didn't make sense because they'd have to go back to school and become a nurse practitioner, and that takes another 2 years. So that wasn't, it just didn't make sense for my practice to do that. But it's challenging here that you have to have the higher level degrees.
Yeah, I have lots of friends who do the MA to RN. What you just mentioned, that, you know, come in as an MA, you learn with me as an MA, then you become an RN in our practice, start injecting, you know, then if you want to go back to school, great. And if you don't, you're an RN injector. But I think about Florida a lot because of overhead costs and staffing costs. You know, as you compare your staff costs to, like, let's say your friends here in Texas, where anyone can inject, including the janitor, if he or she is deemed appropriate by the medical director. And I'm not kidding about that, guys. Anybody can inject in Texas. How does it affect your business? Because you're having to pay top dollar to hire an MP or PA versus here you're hiring, an esthetician can inject in Texas. The cost, and again, you get what you pay for. Don't get me wrong. I believe that wholeheartedly, but it is a difference in cost. So do you have to look at your business in a different way because I'm sure your staff costs are so much higher than you know, in other places?
Well, I like to spoil my staff. So I hope that I am going to be paying them top dollar or, you know, more than that they would make someplace else. And it makes me happy to spoil my staff because they spoil me. So I don't know what the cost of business would be in Texas versus Florida. I can only imagine that it's definitely more expensive. I actually have a physician on staff that I hired last year. She's a doctor or a DO. So that was a very expensive investment. But because we are in Florida, technically, the laws are very strict here that you need to be under a plastic surgery or dermatologist to inject if the doctor is off site. If the doctor is on site, you can be under another specialty. So my husband, who is our medical director, is anesthesia, and Chelsea, who is the physician that we just hired, she was family practice. But both of them, this is their main office. So that protects us for the state of Florida so that we can legally inject. But it's very strict. And I know a lot of people, you know, you go to Miami and it's like being in a different state. I don't know what happens there, but a lot of people are not following the rules. And that's not my problem. But eventually, I think, you know, there will be some sort of enforcement. Right now, it seems to be fairly loose of people flying in this gray area. And if you read the law, it's really not very gray.
Yeah, I think that's all 50 states right now. It's like it's still the Wild Wild West. So I think even though you started in 2009, opening business in, you know, 2017, that part has not changed. That part has gotten no better. I feel like people are still very playing fast and loose, as we say. And, you know, at some point to what you're saying, they're going to get their hands slapped and get found out and get, license removed, you know, license revoked, things like that. Because at some point, the medical boards, nursing boards will start to look at this. We've always laughed in our company, which is awful to say, but as soon as the opioid crisis is over, the fentanyl crisis is over, we're next. Aesthetics is next. You know, so we're kind of getting a handle on fentanyl. We're getting a handle on like drugs coming over the border and different things. We're the next victim here, guys. We're the next one that they're going to turn to, because in healthcare, we're the next most disruptive thing that doesn't follow the rules, I think, as an industry or as a medicine specialty, because it is so crazy. I mean, you're right. And it's not that people are going to be unsafe in doing that. It's just, it's the law. We have to all abide by it. You know, we have to all follow the rules because that's what the rules are. And it's a disadvantage to you if you are following them and someone else is not, that they get some kind of buy that you don't get. And so I always feel like it's not even about safety. It's about just doing the right thing and like following the rules. And we have an issue here all the time because, you know, we're in the medical record side of it. We see what they do in the practice all day long. And people have no medical director. They have no good faith exam. They have no protocols. If you could just see the things I see, you'd just be shocked that people are not in jail, frankly, like that they have a license left because they just do things so crazily. But I'm guessing you have tons of attorneys attorneys that work with you on paperwork, consents, laws, legal, all these things to make sure that you're safe and compliant. So do you have attorneys, and how involved are you like on a day-to-day basis making sure that your business stays compliant, that you are adhering to all the laws, and that you are able to go before any board that asks and say, yep, we're doing it right, we have everything buttoned up and ready to go?
Yeah. So my brother's an attorney and Chelsea's husband is an attorney. So we have lots of little attorneys, and they argue about what arbitration agreement should look like in the consent forms, et cetera. So thankfully, we're covered in that regard. And I think that, you know, you just need to be, because anything could happen. And it's your business, it's your livelihood. I'm responsible for these, you know, these employees. They're almost like my children. So my company is my baby, but my employees are also, I feel responsible for them. And if something silly should happen, to be shut down for something stupid, it just doesn't make sense. It makes sense to be compliant because you don't want to have to worry about it. And it's not that hard, really.
Well, and I think too, and I don't know if this is correct, so I'm not an attorney, so do not quote me on this, but I know at least for us, we have a cyber liability insurance that protects like the cyber part of, you know, all the HIPAA records and things in our system. If for any reason we don't do things the right way, they can choose not to cover that. They can just say, we're not going to cover it. Like, you didn't follow the rules, regulations, the terms of service, so we're not going to cover your claim. I'm going to guess with malpractice insurance, it's the same way. If they find that you are at fault and not following the law, they could always say, well, tough luck, sister, you're on your own. Like, we're not going to cover it. You didn't follow the rules. So I feel like it's also a financial, just massive exposure of not doing it right, because not only is it, you know, your liability policy, you're going to be out money, just, you know, pain and suffering, but also the fact that your malpractice won't kick in and help you because you didn't follow the rules. So it's just not worth it. People, it's just not worth it. Just find out what the laws are. Call your local attorney, AmSpa, whoever you want to call. Get it done. Get it locked in there. Justin Martiz is a great one. Ernest Williams, I have lots of recommendations here, but get it done. Get it done on paper and follow the law. Follow the letter of the law, because I think you're right. It's just not worth it to lose your practice over a silly little detail that you just chose to ignore or didn't even know about. I mean, even worse, you didn't even know about it because you didn't have an attorney on site saying, hey, let's think about this. It's not the right way to do it. Let's change our process. So kudos to you for getting it done.
I think being I didn't know that, or it was a gray area, I don't think that's a good excuse, because it's pretty clear if you read the legislature of what you need, and you need to be prepared for an inspector to come by your office and, you know, look at what your charts are signed off on and your sharps and how you're disposing of needles and all of your things. You know, you're making sure you're keeping your medications correctly. You need to be prepared for an inspection at any moment, because it happens.
And the pharmacy board's a whole different animal. How did you dispose of your expired products, and where do you keep your expired products, and what shelf are things on? Like, a pharmacy board review is pretty intense, like how you're mixing things and all the supplies. It's a lot. So, you know, we deal with that too here. We get subpoenaed. We don't, but our customers do. And, you know, they want to see all the records and different things. And it's not even about compliance as far as like the law. It's like a whole, I don't know, medicine's a whole different set of rules when it comes to the pharmacy board. And I think to your point, there's a lot to regulate there. And again, back to your 6-month onboarding, that nurse or PA who's now doing that is in charge of that for your practice. Like, your least common denominator, your least good employee at keeping things together and noted and documented, is your biggest risk. And they're all part of that. Like, they all contribute in some way to the risk factor of the practice. And so you've got to make sure they're buttoned up. So I'm sure you spend lots of time going through all that, how to do your inventory and check things in and out and charting. And how much time do you spend on like those kind of administrative teaching moments, not just the actual technical skill parts of it?
Well, I try to delegate as much of anything that I personally don't have to do. I try to delegate to somebody else. So my medical assistants do keep track of the medical inventory. So the gauzes, the sponges, all of that. My front desk keeps track of all the retail inventory and, you know, making sure that all of our paperwork is compliant. And I just double check that it's done. But as far as how much time do I spend on the business outside of the business, I hate to tell you, way too much. I know that you don't sleep either. So I'm trying to do better with that, of getting things off of my plate, because in an ideal world, I would love to have one day on admin, one day of training, and 3 days seeing patients. Hopefully, after I get this new injector onboarded, I'll be able to do that.
So one day of admin, what would that consist of for you? Because I hear different things from different folks. A lot of it's marketing hours spent. But in that one day that you're spending on admin, is it, you know, bankers and looking at leases and properties? Is it looking at marketing things? Is it headcount? What's like an average, you know, I think as a new injector coming in saying, I want to own my own practice. What does that actually mean? When you say you want to own your own practice, like, what are the kinds of things you're doing in those admin days that are just either exhausting for you, that you hate doing, or that are just the things that you have to do all the time, they never stop?
Well, I like to check my numbers. almost at least weekly, I check my numbers to see where we are, how we're doing this month. You know, is it a good month? Is it not a good month? You know, what's the revenue coming in? And, you know, what's going out to make sure that I'm ahead of, you know, that curve. So that's a big thing. Marketing, thinking about, well, you know, we just got the Silphrim X. So how are we going to market this new machine? How are we going to introduce this to our patients, our patient base? Okay, I want to send a newsletter out. What do I want that newsletter to see, to say? What are we going to do, you know, some freebies? We're going to have some models come in. We're going to do some filming for the social media. So telling, I have a girl that helps me with my marketing. It's one of my front desk, and I pay her for 5 days a week, and she is only in the office 3 days a week. So those other 2 days, she's really helping me edit videos, coming up with ideas, posting to my Instagram. I run my personal Instagram as far as answering and doing my stories, but she helps me with the video taping and also the editing process and some of the captions, things like that. And I just proof it. But coming up with how we're going to sell this new device to the practice so that we can make money on it. We also are bringing on a hair removal device. So I'm getting back into hair removal. So that'll be a whole interesting ball game, but that's coming in August. So we're going to have to market that and figure out how we're going to sell that. So I do spend some time on that. And just keeping track, like making sure everybody's doing their job and that they've signed off on the tasks that I've asked them to do, and just double checking it. Usually I like to see it just to make sure that I approve of the way that it's done. And normally it's totally fine. And I just say, yep, that's good. That's good. That's good. And off it goes to the next person.
Well, you mentioned my favorite device on the earth right now, the Silphrim X, which I'm obsessed with it. I think it does an incredible job. And you actually just came back from today. You've been training on it with your team.
I had my neck done today. You probably can't tell on video, it's a little. I didn't have them do my face. I was worried about being pink.
Well, I'm sure you'll have a great result. But I think to that point, let's forgo the marketing aspect of it. You guys have now done it, you know, a couple times today in training. How long until you feel like your team is comfortable enough to start, again, you mentioned before, charging for the procedure and really feeling like that they can stand behind the results that they're getting, or even learning more advanced ways to use the device? How long does that usually take until you go from buying it to actually launching it full throttle?
I'm hoping it's only going to be, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before we have some paying patients. We'll probably do, normally I don't do specials. I'm not a big fan of specials, but we will do introductory pricing probably for the first, I would say, 50 people that sign up, that they'll get some introductory pricing, and that's how we'll onboard it. I might do a thing on my Instagram where like a contest where you like, follow, tag somebody to get a free treatment. So I might do something like that. I'll send a newsletter out announcing the new device and all the wonderful things about it and why we love it. I'll do a blog post about it and, you know, how wonderful it is. I am planning to stack it with my BBL and Moxie treatments. So it's going to be a combination or part of a combination treatment. And we have named that the Deluxe Bright and Tight. So I'm super excited about that. So it's going to be a quick BBL, and then we'll do the microneedling on top and then the Moxie on top of that. So that'll be customized for our practice, so other people can't duplicate it, which I highly recommend you do for your treatments.
You just said so many things there that are just music to my ears. I'm obsessed with this idea of proprietary methods. I don't know if you saw, we did a class with Katie Lindham a few weeks ago about, you know, brand your own thing, make it your own, carve out your little niche. I love the Bright and Tight, by the way. That's a fantastic name. But I think what you mentioned there, that you're stacking things together so it can be customizable for the patient, but also for what you have on site, like what you have on hand. You have 3 devices. Why not put them all together? Because it's a better, bigger sell for you. And also, they're already in the room, right? They're already there. They've already done their paperwork, their consents, all the things that you mentioned about legal that you have to get done. But I love that idea, like just stack it all together. But I think, too, if you look at, you know, like a Silphrim X, you can now add on exosomes as an add-on, you know, or as a plus-up. You can add on, you know, some skincare afterwards, that you've had all these things done with your face. You need some skincare to take home with you for recovery. it becomes like a little magnet for all these other things you can add on and charge for, and the patient actually needs, don't get me wrong, but that you can charge for to upsell the whole thing. And again, you mentioned revenue per hour, you know, things like profitability matter to you, revenue matters to you, and now you have another way to do that. But I think the SilverMex is going to be fantastic for you. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. So good. All my friends who have it love it so much. Yes, 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 yes. Well, to that point, you are a laser guru. That's, you love devices. People hate them because they can't sell them. How do you get them to work? How do you get people to actually come in and get treatments done and keep coming back for more? Because you're in a sunshine state that's sunny 12 months out of the year. So you don't have the winter blues like we all do in other places. But how do you actually market it and make money on lasers?
Well, I love lasers. I'm super into lasers. I want my patients to have healthy, beautiful skin. I talk about it on my Instagram. I talk about it on my webpage. I think healthy skin is natural and beautiful. And I don't think you can do it with just injectables. I think you need your lasers to really polish that skin and give you that glow. And it amplifies your injectable results. When I see spotty, bad skin on Instagram, on the before and afters, I'm like, oh my God, you know, this person needs a laser. What is going on? So I'm just super passionate about it. And I'm good at it. So I train my providers to provide an excellent experience and get good results for the patients. And then they tell their friends and their sisters and their moms. And then the next thing you know, we're busy. So it works.
Yeah, and you're a trainer, aren't you? I think for one of the brands for lasers, I think that's a big key difference here too, is that your results are probably far above and beyond maybe those who are not quite as knowledgeable about it as you are. You know, we hear horror stories about people getting burned and things, you know, adverse events happening. I think it's one of those things that it takes a long time to get really good at laser, to do more of the advanced kinds of things and stacking things together and when to do what things. And when you guys start talking about conferences, all the different depths and things with the lasers, my eyes just gloss over. I'm like, what are you even saying? It's like you're speaking a different, like, I know injectables and threads, I don't know anything about lasers, but it seems to be very intricate and very involved. And so as you think about your practice and your staff learning it on top of your injectables, like, when does your new person start touching lasers? When does she get ready for all of that? It's a whole different animal.
I'm actually probably going to teach her lasers before I teach her injectables. I can train on lasers pretty easily. So that's something that is just instinctive to me. I have a protocol that, you know, I started with I speak for Cyton and I do some training for them, but I have a protocol that I have taken from them and expanded upon it so that it's proprietary to us and super safe. And, you know, if she follows those steps, she will be fine. But we have to be careful. We're in Florida. So people are darker here. So sometimes some of these protocols, even that I've seen from Cyton, mine are a little bit different because they are customized for Florida. And our patients do get sun and they are outside playing tennis and pickleball. Pickleball's huge. So you do need to be mindful of, you know, what is going on with the skin to be safe, because we don't want complications.
Pickleball. I just saw that played for the first time this weekend. My little boy, we were at dinner and he played it with another person. I'm like, I'm going to have to play pickleball. It looks so fun. But, you know, you mentioned that people in Florida, they're darker, you know, a lot of sun. I mean, it's such a sunny little place. Everyone in Florida is loving the sun and they're out and about all the time. And so it brings me to think about laser hair removal for you, because think about bikini lines and just, you know, we want to all be hairless in the summertime. But what made you think, you know, again, in 2023, I need to do laser hair again, bring that back in? We have, you know, the ideal images with the laser away places. What would make a person want to do that? Because I think it's genius, by the way. I think if you talk to anybody at Candela, they're huge on this. Like, you have to have LHRs, how you build your practice. They talk about that all the time in Candela events. But what made you decide you wanted to have it right now?
So it's something that I can teach really easily. I know it inside and out. So that part, I feel very comfortable about. I also feel like every woman should be hairless in certain places. I think, like, who doesn't love a 5-minute shower? So it's something that I think we can market and sell fairly easily. But the main reason is my long-term Felicia medical assistant that I hired, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And the reason that I have health insurance at my practice, she was ready to do something else. And she really wants to go to school and be a nurse and all of these things. And I said, you know what? Legally in the state of Florida, you can go and get your electrology certificate. and it has an extra test that you take for laser hair removal. And because we have a doctor on site, you can run a laser hair removal device legally for us. So I said, you go to this program, and I am paying for her to do this program because I love her and I want to support her in her next phase. So she's getting her certificate, which she'll have in August. So the device is coming in August, and we're, you know, I'm going to let her see patients independently without me. I have my new nurse practitioner that's kind of acting as my medical assistant in the interim, but I'm happy and sad at the same time because she's my left and right hand and off she's going, but I want to support her in her growth as an employee.
First of all, she hit the jackpot with you because you are going above and beyond, and as you should for great employees, right? Like, I commend you for A, doing it, but also B, that she's good enough that you want to do it. That's fantastic. But, you know, look at a person who's made that transition from now an MA into doing like LHR. What a great referral for the practice, because she knows all the things that you do, how they all work, who gets what, who should be getting what, how, you know, how long it will take, what you should do together. Like, she's going to be the most knowledgeable person ever going into that role and can refer a patient to all these different places because they're sitting there getting LHR done, right? It's quick, but still you have to sit there and kind of do it and, you know, get worked up, whatever. But she's a great talking, you know, billboard for all the places in your practice that a patient could also go. And as they are for her, it's just a natural, to me, it's a natural add-on. Like, I need to go, I'm thinking right now I should go book some LHR for, like, you know, my underarms, my legs, all the places. You forget about it because no one ever mentions it anymore. I mean, it's crazy. I go to med spas all the time and no one ever says, hey, we recommend that you should do this. You know, do you have any issues with your hair? Should we do laser hair? It never gets talked about. And I'm like, what money on the table is left all across this country right now because no one asks about it. No one does it. They're getting it somewhere. They're getting it from somebody's practice. It's a huge industry.
I feel like everybody, it's kind of, I hate to say it's kind of like Botox, but everybody is doing laser hair removal and I'm referring out down the street and I am tired of referring out down the street. So we're going to have it here now, and talk to me at Aesthetic Next. By then, you know, it'll be onboarded and I'll let you know how it's going, but I think it's going to be successful just like the Silverm X, and I'm super excited about it.
Well, since you are the guru, what device did you buy? Which one passed the Dana test?
I got the Cyton Bear HR. It is a diode laser, and it also treats all skin types. So I think it'll be good for Florida. I was tempted with the Candela because that is what I was used to in my previous practice. And it's an Alex laser, and it has... also, you know, you can tune it down to a 1064, but I have a relationship with Cyton, and I'm going to stick with Cyton for the hair removal.
Well, I will definitely ask in September because I'm curious how it's going to go. And certainly you're doing a newer injector, newer boot camp kind of talk. It'd be great for Tim to hear it as well. Like, hey guys, it's not just about injectables here. It's about all the things you can be doing as a practice owner or injector. It's not just about how much Botox you can sling or filler you can sling. It's holistic for the patient. But brings me to my next question, and we'll kind of start wrapping up here, but is training. We were kind of discussing before this started that you're doing shadow days. You're also doing like hands-on training days, and it's disruptive for the practice, very disruptive for the practice, I'm sure. And how you're thinking about, you know, pricing that out, and if they come on as a shadow, does it disrupt you more than if they're just coming in for like a blocked out training day? And so folks who are thinking about doing trainings in your practice, I think she's got some good things to say about how to envision in your mind charging for it, but also, do you really want to do it or not? And how can you incentivize one kind of training over the other? So give us your recent learnings about shadowing versus hands-on trainings.
So I have had shadows come in for the day, and it does slow me down for sure. And it takes away a little bit from my patient experience, because when my patients are in my chair, they are the center of my universe, and they're the center of my medical assistant's universe, my front desk's universe. We want them to feel special, like they just can't wait to do more things with us. They can't wait to come back again. And that's the experience that we're trying to achieve. So if I'm teaching the whole time, I'm with that patient and explaining the whole treatment and why we're doing it and pointing things out, it does take away a little bit from that experience. And I can see less patients during that shadow time. So I do private trainings, which is what I prefer to do, where the injector will bring a couple models and they usually tell me what they want to focus in on and work on. And we'll spend 4 hours going through. Well, first we usually go through anatomy. I love to teach on the consultation process because I think that's super important. Taking really good photography, going over the photographs with your patient, pointing out things that you might see kind of on a different screen, I think really helps them, the patient, instead of looking in the mirror. So we go over that. Touching your patient, showing them, you know, how the fillers might help improve their cheek contour, kind of explaining the aging process of how the face deflates and how we might be able to reinflate it. So really talking about that consultation process, breaking it down for new providers is something I spend a lot of time on in my training. And then full face toxin. I'm a big full face toxin on almost 90% of my patients do full face toxin. So that's really big for us. And then of course, you know, Sculptra and hyperdilute Radies, my two favorite things. And I also do laser if they want to work on laser.
Well, you mentioned some things that are very interesting for me, like the touching of the face is like so important. Also photography, huge. And I love the idea of putting it on a screen. It's more objective on a screen, not in the mirror. And also if you're looking down, you know, as you look down in the mirror, everything kind of falls, it looks terrible. And you did a lot of, I think I saw two posts recently that you did with like a professional camera, walking through photography, how to do it, how to get it all done, which is a skill set to actually take good pictures that you can actually use as clinical photography, but also like social media photography. But where does retail fit in all this? Because as I said before, your site is fantastic. You have a whole e-commerce part of your website that's just fantastic. So if someone comes into shadow with you, how do you help them understand or see the benefit to spending some time on retail and e-commerce and like selling things in the practice and not just doing all procedural all day long? Because again, those numbers matter, and you know, button chair time is not always forgiving when it comes to adding on revenue. So how do you work that into everything, and how do you even as a practice work it in? Like, who does all the shipping and who does all the order taking? And I'm sure there's a whole supply chain management process there as well.
So I think, you know, all of our patients, it's like going to the dentist twice. So, you know, twice a year, people have said this before, you got to brush your teeth every day to keep your mouth healthy. It's the same for your skin. So I'm a pretty simplified skincare person. I really think there are four or five things that everybody needs, you know, your vitamin C, your sunblock, your Retin-A, good moisturizer. I love these new exosomes that we're all doing. That's a new favorite of mine. But I talk to my patients about this on my Instagram of how important it is to take care of your skin. I talk to them in their practice. We give them a consultation sheet when they come in recommending certain products. We have a lot of snowbirds here. So they live up north in the summertime. So they will order products online in the winter. And I also think, I hate to say it's easy money, but a lot of these companies like Skin Better Science, I think is that we don't carry Zio, but Zio, Nutrafol, Color Science, they will have a little microsite on that you can put on your site. So if you're recommending the product, if they click the link on your website or on your Instagram link tree or whatever, and the patient buys through that link, your practice will get credit for that. Those are my favorite types of products to carry because it makes the labor in my practice really easy. So us packaging up product and shipping it out is a task, and it takes time away from the staff. So my favorite products to sell on my website are the microsite products where I don't have to do anything except recommend the product. And then they start buying it. They want more of it. They order it from their summer home, and it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, we just, Upneek just launched Elevate. Same kind of thing, right? You can go on and do your subscription. You can order it all online. It gets shipped to, you know, to their house. You guys don't have to carry out the inventory or do any kind of shipping of things out. And I feel like that's what everyone, take a note, brands listening. If you make it easy for a practice to carry your product, they'll carry your product. And if you don't, they can't. because to your point, the front desk girl cannot be doing all of her jobs and also being the shipping manager of the practice. And you have to have like the nice tissue paper and the nice boxes to ship them in. Like the shipping alone is very expensive, like to get the nice, and you want it to look like your practice, right? To be nice and fancy and sophisticated and having all the little gold foil things on there. It's pricey. And so I agree. If they can take care of the inventory and getting it shipped out on time and getting the UPS or FedEx labels made and all that, and you don't have to do it and even handle the money and just pay you back a fee at the end of the month, that is what I'm talking about. That's the best way to do it. And so I agree with you. And it, unfortunately, in many cases, it would sway an opinion of, you know, I don't know if I want to carry line A or line B. Well, if line A is easier to carry than line B, I'm going line A. Even if I like line B maybe a little bit more, it's just easier for me to use line, you know, A, skin better, whatever it is. So I think that's definitely a thing. What other kinds of things are you adding on in the practice besides just skincare? Any other retail items? Are you doing Upneek, Latisse, vitamin supplements? You mentioned like Nutrafol. You know, what other things do you do besides just skincare products?
We have Upneek, we have Latisse, we have some prescription. We use Skinvy for Retin-A, like they have a hydroquinone mix. We have some minoxidil for hair growth. We all lost our hair during COVID, so we had to come up with something to do to save our hair from falling out. But I sell, my number one seller is sunblock. So I have probably, I must have 16 different types of sunblock. The girls are like, no more sunblocks. But that's, you know, I preach sunblock all day long. So that's our number one seller here.
And whatever you're passionate about, people will buy. Just like laser. You can do laser well because you're passionate about laser and it comes through to your patients and they believe you and it's honest. And so you sell lots of laser. I mean, I believe that wholeheartedly. It's hard to sell things you don't believe in. So, you know, whatever it is that you're doing over there, it's working. Your practice has grown. You're doing lots of cool, innovative things. I love the fact that you're bringing on laser hair removal. I can't wait to hear about that in September. But also the Silpharmex. I mean, just hiring new people, getting them in, getting them trained, doing your own trainings as well. Your plate is getting mighty full, my friend. So how do you envision yourself as you look at the next, you know, year to 2 years, getting this all to work without killing you and having time to like have any sort of a life outside of your job?
Well, the good thing is that my husband doesn't need me that much. No, we're, you know, our kids are grown. So my kids are all in graduate school or above. And my husband is my, he's a house husband now, mainly. He comes in, he brings us lunch pretty much almost every day. He comes and brings lunch for the staff, takes care of the dog. And I am hoping that I will be able to duplicate myself a couple more times, and then I can work a little less. I am super passionate about sharing knowledge, training, super excited about, you know, talking at Aesthetic Next and sharing there. So I really want to do more of that, and maybe do a training center. I know it's, you know, kind of jumping on that train, but I'd love to kind of on a smaller scale do that, ideally probably for energy devices and a little bit biostimulators, more customized. I've had some people come back to me who I've trained for Sculptra and some other things, and now they want to come train with me for energy devices. So that's kind of exciting. But I don't want it to be a big center. I'm small and boutique, and I want to stay small and boutique.
Well, I think you're off to the races and getting all that done. I need a house husband. I need to figure out how to get one of those. Where are they selling those at Walmart? I need to buy one. No, I'm kidding. But I'm sure it is thinking about when your kids were younger, you know, small children, and husband who was still practicing, I'm sure actively, it would have been a lot to take in. So I think there is this idea that we try to do everything in aesthetics and be all the things, all the people. You just can't do it. You have to give up something somewhere, whether it be, you know, waiting to be a trainer until later on in your career or waiting to add on a new space until later on in your career. You know, we've got to give and take here. I find that every day with my own life of like, I want to do everything all the time. And it's just not possible when you have a 10-year-old little boy at home. But you're past that. You're in your prime time now. You can do all the fun things. So I can't wait to see you in September in Dallas for Aesthetic Next. You're going to be taking the stage. I think it's on Friday and Saturday or Saturday. What days are you going to be on stage? Do you know? I don't even know.
I think it's early morning Friday is when it is.
Yeah, it's a 4-hour boot camp. One of those is a long, long little trek there of all kinds of you guys who are experts in your field doing 30-minute like little sub-lectures and then acting as a panel as well to kind of bounce off each other and talk about oh, I do it this way. Oh, I do it this way. Okay, let's talk through why that is. And so I think it's really helpful for a new injector to hear even the differences in opinion of injectors who are seasoned doing things to say there's more than one way to skin a cat. And let's kind of talk through some of those, you know, nuances. And then your individual lecture is about laser and also combining that with other treatment types as well, what you're doing in practice right now already. So you'll be knocking that one out of the park too, I'm sure.
Yeah, I do a custom stack with BBL, biostimulators, and Moxie. So that's my, you know, we're all about customization here. I customize, I don't think it's going to be too much for your boot camp. I know they're only 2 years experience, but I'm going to throw it at them. It's using different dilutions for your toxin in different parts of the face in the same treatment. So it's highly customized. So I hope that they enjoy that because it's something I'm super passionate about.
Well, we'll soon see, right? I guess we'll find out. But I love this idea that you're doing stacks, by the way. What a cool concept. I think everyone who's listening, think about that in your own practice, how to combine your treatments into like a really concise way to think about them where they're always aligned together. And it's not randomly putting things together. It's like, this is the stack. This is the combo that we give for XYZ, you know, consideration or indication. I think that's great. I mean, it's brilliant. You're living out my PAM dreams, my proprietary aesthetic method dreams, all in one fell swoop here.
I have to give Kaylee a little plug because I did do her class. I actually have done three of her classes and she's wonderful. She's invaluable wealth of knowledge at really honing down core values for your practice and your vision and kind of the goals for the practice. And I highly recommend her class that I think you guys are tied together now a little bit.
Yeah, we did one together just to get people kind of thinking through their PAM and get started on it and then going into her Confidence at Scale program and some of her more advanced programs. But even getting folks just to think, how can I look and sound and feel different than my competitor at just a base level? Just like getting your PAM identified, I think is a gap in the marketplace in general because you're one of the first people I've ever talked to on the podcast actually has a proprietary aesthetic method like in their vernacular, like in their practice mantra that you're doing it all the time. So you're one of probably three I can think about in 60 episodes who has that done. So you're the exception, not the rule. And hopefully at one point it'll be the rule, right? Where it's like what you have to do to compete and to survive.
Well, we all do things a tiny bit differently. It's just kind of naming it and writing it down and specializing it and making it that much better. And right, they're not going to get your competitors are not going to be able to duplicate that. But I think the other thing Kaylee taught me in one of her, I don't know if it was Confidence to Scale, is really those core values, which really helps you with hiring. So we named them of, you know, honesty, lifelong learners, being fun, passionate, being committed to the practice. So now we weave being honest into every part of us. So we're honest with our patients. I'm honest with my reps when they come in. I'm honest what I can achieve. I'm honest with my staff. I'm like, okay, we can't do this month, but hopefully next month we want another Zimmer chiller. Well, we're going to have to wait on the Zimmer chiller. So really being honest and weaving that truthfully into everything that you do is really important. And I got that from her and reading. I do a lot of leadership reading, super fun.
And scary sometimes, trust me. I'm like, oh, one more thing I have to do to be better at being a leader. And leading people is a hard task, and leading a business as well, money-wise. But we've unpacked a lot of things today and gone through a lot of information. And we'll have even more with Dana at Aesthetic Next. So make sure you have your tickets for that and that you go to the workshop because you're going to learn lots of things. If you're a new injector, for sure go to that workshop. It's fantastic. And we're going to be checking in with you about the LHR in September, sister. Don't you worry. I want to find out how that's going. But thank you for coming on today and for sharing your experiences and really what you've done in the past 25 years to really come to this great, I guess, precipice of like becoming a trainer now on your own and also adding to your practice and adding new devices. And all of it's kind of coming together in a really cool time where the industry is just exploding and you are ripe for to ride the wave. So congratulations to all your success.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on and I can't wait to see you in September. And yeah, we'll continue the conversation.
Absolutely. Well, I'll see the rest of you guys next week on another episode of For the Record. Bye guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of For the Record. This podcast is not intended to provide legal or medical advice.
It's for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. For more information on this week's guest or to get started with Aesthetic Record, email us at info@aestheticrecord.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh perspectives on disrupting the status quo and surviving in the aesthetics industry.